Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You. Today in our audience, special guests, the parents of Carolyn Faye Fox.
You know, your parents are sitting in the second row. You know, you gotta...
When we started, they were in the first row.
Look at Shirley's face. Did you see the line of color just rise right up like that? Today, we're in Lincoln, Massachusetts, discussing the unusual career choices that brought us all here today.
Were you a dentist?
No, never, never.
He is a dentist.
Well, I've had a varied career.
It's He's an optometrist.
But he did use a drill as an optometrist. It's one of the reasons my career was cut short.
Went immediately into show business, which...
Hence the eye tooth. Yeah.
There's us and the North Shore Acapella, next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder.
We have a police officer here. Let's show him our thanks.
Residents had a candlelight vigil last night showing their appreciation for a uniformed police officer who was in the crowd as they sang God Bless America and chanted Boston Strong. Investigators are trying to establish a motive for the bombing of the Boston Marathon. They have yet to question the surviving suspect. Jahar Tsarnaev remains hospitalized and under heavy guard. But there are concerns about plans to question him without reading him his Miranda rights. Hannah Shamsi is with the American Civil Liberties Union. She says the Supreme Court's public safety Miranda exception is limited.
And that it should not be used to cut corners that would prevent a legitimate, full, fair prosecution.
Authorities are looking into whether Jahar Tsarnaev and his older brother had help from others. In China, a powerful earthquake has left at least 200 people dead and more than 11,000 injured. Nearly two dozen are still missing. As NPR's Louisa Lim reports, it struck this weekend along the same fault line as a devastating quake 5 years ago that killed 90,000 people.
With landslides blocking the mountain roads, rescuers were still trying to reach some stricken villages in Ya'an in southwestern Sichuan province. Scores of people have been pulled out of the rubble of their houses, but this time it's believed no schools collapsed, unlike in 2008 when thousands of children were killed when their schools fell down on them. China's deployed 18,000 troops to help in the relief effort. The Premier Li Keqiang has also flown out and has vowed the government will help local residents rebuild their homes. Saturday's quake measured 6.6. It also made one young news reporter into a national celebrity after she interrupted her own wedding to report on the earthquake, still in her white wedding gown and corsage. Louisa Lim, NPR News, Beijing.
In Colorado this weekend, a backcountry avalanche killed five snowboarders. A group was riding near a local ski area when they apparently triggered the slide. Colorado Public Radio's Megan Verlee reports a sixth man survived.
The local sheriff says one man in the group was able to make it to the edge of the slide. He was partially submerged, but worked his way free and called for help. Loveland Pass, where the slide occurred, is popular with backcountry skiers and snowboarders because of its proximity to Denver. The avalanche risk along Colorado's Front Range is currently listed as considerable, with a week of heavy spring snow making larger, more destructive slides more likely. This is the state's deadliest avalanche in the last 50 years. For NPR News, I'm Megan Verlee in Denver.
Also in Colorado, police are looking for suspects in this weekend's shooting during an annual celebration of marijuana. Thousands had gathered in Denver yesterday to mark the counterculture holiday known as 420. Three people wounded by gunfire. This is NPR News. Officials in the city of West Texas are trying to reassure residents as they reopen parts of the area evacuated after last Wednesday's fertilizer explosion. NPR Sam Sanders reports that some new safety measures are in effect.
Mayor Pro Tem Steve Vanyak announced Saturday that some residents could begin to return to homes damaged by Wednesday's blast, which killed at least 14. He assured them as he reopened a part of the impacted area that they'd be fine.
First and foremost, I want to dispel any rumors of any health or safety hazards or threats at this time in the city of West. It is safe, it is safe, it is safe for our citizens.
Banyak also announced a sunset curfew in the impact area as a safety precaution. Sam Sanders, NPR News, West Texas.
Moving on to California, where it's early in the wildfire season, but Jennifer McClain, the spokeswoman for the city of Monrovia, says many residents were caught off guard by an evacuation order this weekend.
They should be ready, yes. Actually, the fire department just sent out a letter to these homeowners on Friday, letting them know brush season is upon us. They need to start clearing their brush, or else they can face penalties by June 1st.
A brush fire erupted yesterday in the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains east of Los Angeles. McClain says the fire was apparently sparked by equipment being used by a backyard gardener. Authorities say it ended up scorching about 175 acres, but never threatened any homes. Crews are making progress on the fire. Evacuation orders have been lifted, and authorities say crews have the fire about halfway contained. I'm Giles Snyder, and this is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science, technology, and economics in the modern world.
We're having a party, and everybody's
welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
On the radio.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From Bemis Hall in Lincoln, Massachusetts, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. While others may find his distant gaze intriguing, we know he just needs a nap. Tony Khan. While others may be charmed by her manner, we know there's mischief afoot with Lenore Shannon.
Watch out, Lincoln.
While others may be impressed with his scholarship, we know he slept through statistics just like everybody else. Mr. Barry Nolan. And who leads today?
We're going to tickle him under the chin.
I am the Alexander Haig of Says You.
Somebody say
Barry
something.
Will spring to the fore. To my left, team two, her puns never cease to amaze us, though we sometimes wish she'd desist. Carolyn Faye Fox. Her elegance belies a devilishness just Beelzebub bubbling up to the surface. Paula Lyons. And I once paid him to shave off his mustache, and he's been giving me lip ever since. Mr. Arnie Raisman. And on this occasion, who steps to the fore?
It's the devilish one herself, or as my mother would say, Diveline. So, Paula Wilcaffer.
Correct answers are worth 10 points, or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin a round of definitions and derivations. For 5 points, define, and for an additional 5, try to divine the origins of the following common words and phrases. Carolyn, true blue.
True blue, real, genuine, the real thing, honest,
dependable,
sincere,
reliable.
You could count on.
Yeah,
loyal. True loyal,
blue.
Loyal, and
loyal, loyalty. Yes.
What?
True blue, and the derivation is.
Is it an American derivation?
A policeman.
What a great guess! Not correct, but great guess.
Does it have to do with the hue of the color?
Yes, it does.
The fact that it's not navy, it's not pale blue, it's a true blue.
That's not quite it, no. But it does have a lot to do with the color.
But is it an American phrase?
It is not.
So. Is it British?
Yes.
Oh, it's British then.
So part of their flag.
And it doesn't have anything to do with blue blood.
It does not have to do with blue blood.
It's another
color.
Hey there,
we're running out here.
It's British.
True blue is like sky?
Ocean.
No, struggling a little bit.
Flag.
Does it have anything to do with fabric or association to uniforms in any way? Or?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So right. What's
so
the blue
the
uniform?
Well, the Bobbies of the Navy. The Bobbies wore Navy.
You know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points for getting to fabric. Very good. Right. It is. It has a commercial origin. The dyers of cloth in Coventry in 17th uh-huh. century England produced a blue color that just didn't fade.
Fade.
Stayed there, and that was called true blue, and that's where they got it from. So 10
true
points.
Blue.
Nice job.
Richard, may I introduce a linguistic note?
Sure.
In Russia, there is no one word for blue. They don't see blue. They see two distinctly different colors for which they have different words.
Oh, really?
So there's sinyi and goluboy. And they would recognize them. They would put them in their...
There are two blues in their rainbow? Is it just one... One of them is represented?
There are no blues in the rainbow.
No blues in the
rainbow.
No,
for a minute there, it was a scholarly exercise, wasn't it?
Can you understand why I didn't go for my PhD now?
Kind of broke down there. All right, try this one, Tony. Definition and derivation of chinless wonder.
Oh, gosh, a chinless... Well, I'm not entirely sure... Other than its application to me, how that's used in general, a chinless wonder, clearly distinguished for no particularly good reason, you know, just a total incompetence, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
The chinless wonder.
Someone regarded as weak and ineffectual.
Yes, I think that's very close to what it is.
It comes from the ancient, but Middle Age British practice of chopping someone's head off. And then saying, now let's see what you can do. And it was actually a medical practice. They gave it up after a while when they realized.
I'm so tempted to hit the bell, you have no idea.
A chinless wonder.
But I'm going to make them work a little harder than that.
It is from the field of politics, right?
Well, in a way, but Tony's certainly in the right country. That's
Was there a politician who was really distinguished for a lack of just about everything, including a chin?
Well, there was someone who was...
Cromwell?
It is not Cromwell.
I would say the entire...
Churchill.
No. You know what? I'm going to...
Clement Attlee.
Queen Victoria.
There you go, Queen Victoria. There's the 10 points.
Thank you, my dear.
Very good.
But she was hardly weak and ineffectual.
An astounded Lenore Shannon.
It's
a derogatory term for an upper-class or aristocratic specimen, usually incompetent and you know, only got there because of their social connections. If you saw a picture of Queen Victoria, you'd understand her receding chin was generally assumed to be a product of inbreeding passed down to royal offspring, and that's just about when the phrase started to come up. So that's when you got it.
Wow.
Try this one, Arnie. Definition and derivation of pantomime.
Pantomime. Well, pantomime is to act out something silently.
It is.
With gestures.
That's 5 points.
Isn't it named for a... French character?
It is, well, no, it goes back way before that.
Way before French?
Oh, yeah.
The
Gouldens.
The pre-French. The pre-French.
The Greeks.
The Greeks. Pantomimus.
It goes back to the Greeks. Do you want to take a shot at the how it actually...
Pantomima Populus.
Pantomima Populus. Right.
You know, your parents are sitting in the second row. You've got to...
When we started, they were in the first row.
Look at Shirley's face. Did you see the line of color just rise right up like that?
It's possession of trousers.
Possession of trousers. How about I give them a very generous 8 points because they got the grease, they got the... And we go to the other side. You want to take a shot at this?
What does pantos mean? It must come from...
Is pan from all or world or to all?
That's exactly pan? Right. It pan? Is from pan, meaning right. all. And the other part of the word means to imitate. To imitate
mimic.
All. Pantomime. And that's where it comes from. So very good, Bear. Try this one, Lenore. Definition and derivation of jeans. J-E-A-N-S, jeans.
Jeans.
Yeah.
denim trousers that are sewn with yellow thread.
Exactly.
That one has worn. Actually, they've been around for longer than you think.
Yes.
Jeans. They've been around for several hundred years, actually.
That's true.
Were they Jean? Were they Jean's pants?
Oh, that's. She's not Jean. You didn't want to go that
okay.
way. This is
All right. It well, actually then jeans pants.
Yeah. Well.
Was it? Is it a name for sailcloth?
No. Let me just say this. Lenore is getting there. It was originally jeans. G-E-E-N-S, or jeans. I'm not sure how that's pronounced, but that was the original spelling, G-E-E-N-S. Can you imagine why?
Wasn't this, weren't they originally made for sailors?
Yes. Do you know where?
On their lower bodies.
From the waist down.
Oh, Indian? Are they?
No, it is not.
Oh, that's a good guess.
Anyone want to take a guess?
Genoa
is
Genoa.
Exactly right. Genoa. From the audience, made in Genoa, Italy, the heavy cloth which first flourished in this town was named
jeans. They invented the salami, which was the main diet of Levi Strauss. I see it all now.
It's all coming clear to him now.
It's all. I'm getting it.
Paula, definition and derivation of in the buff.
In the buff.
Well, in the buff means minus one's clothing.
It does.
But a buff, what's buff?
Color?
Yes,
it is. It's that. It's yeah. that.
The buff is the color of
a European yes. Caucasian
flesh.
Flesh.
Well, under certain circumstances.
Well, without the sun.
Untanned.
It's tanned. And I'm going to give you the 10 points for it.
Okay.
That's
okay.
It is.
Sure.
It, of course, means, naked and refers to being in the buff. Buff is that tannish hue of the leather coats English soldiers wore for centuries.
Yep.
But it came to the fore because it resembled the color of an Englishman.
Right.
The Englishman might attain by going out and trying to get some sun.
So when you talked about someone who was really buff, it meant something different.
Yes, it really
so
did.
So Englishmen in the 17th century... Did they go out on their roofs to tan?
On ships, no doubt.
On ships, no doubt.
And Her Majesty's
Barry,
flotilla.
Definition and derivation of run rings around.
To run rings around someone is to vastly outperform someone else's effort.
Yes, exactly. Very good.
And to be able to, it's what my children do to me on a regular basis. As you're going on your long walk, the children will run around you as you slowly proceed. If I walk a mile, they've run seven.
That's you're getting points for that, believe it or not.
Does that have anything to do with the ripples in a pond, with the...
No, it does not. Good guess. It doesn't.
Yeah. Or is it the way dogs herd sheep?
Not sheep.
Dogs herd things.
Cows.
Dogs herd those farm animals.
Not
and
to...
Chinchillas. Those, I know it's a chinchilla.
Those.
You got to the dogs. You got to, you're so close.
Shepherding.
No.
Herding.
Oh, you got 9 points.
Gathering.
But they can't quite put it down. Audience, what is it? It's a fox. It is
a
from fox.
Fox
hunting.
Oh. Fox hunting.
That is, we got a new one. What do you know? It is from fox hunting. Hares would try to escape the dogs by running in circles called rings, and it gained its more figurative meaning in the 1800s.
Oh, so that's good where answer. It comes from. Good
Boy.
Answer.
9 points for that. Nice job. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from the North Shore a cappella. It is the first of the Says You bluffing rounds. No. Wait. We hold up.
Hold up.
Can't fault them for enthusiasm, ladies and gentlemen.
It's the first of the Says You bluffing rounds. Hit it, boys.
You gotta love it. It is the first of the Says You bluffing rounds. Paula, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot. Good enough to fool Barry's team. 10 points up for grabs to Barry if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Paula, if he can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word miggle. M-I-G-G-L-E, miggle. Now. Live performance is in Port Townsend, Washington, Friday, June 21st. It's a community Says You to benefit the Clemente Course for the Humanities, featuring Says You team captains and local denizens vying for verbal supremacy. Tickets, information, and details are available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. We hope you'll be there for an evening of wit and wordplay as the whole town turns out to support community education. That's Friday, June 21st in Port Townsend, Washington. A live performance of Says You.
Lonely room, I think of you.
Says You returns after this from home.
Support for Says You comes from Nashville Public Radio listener members and Eric Grassman, Molly Edmondson, Lucy Smith, and Marty Warren of Frederick and Clark Realty, committed to providing home buyers and sellers experience, service, and integrity. Home searches are available at frederickandclark.com. Lipscomb University's Department of Biology now offering a Master of Biomolecular Science, a non-thesis laboratory-based degree for individuals whose goal is medical or dental school or work in a biomolecular-based career through evening classes. Accepting applications now for the May 28th cohort. More information is available online at biology.lipscomb.edu.
What do Gary Russell of Melbourne, Florida, Ellen Cuevisto of San Francisco, and Bob Bird of Birmingham, Alabama all have in common? Well, all have contributed questions to Says You and thus been immortalized in the Says You Hall of Fame. And if you too wish such universal recognition, send us a question, dazzle us with cleverness, confuse us to the point of curiosity. That's the only way into the Says You Hall of Fame. There's no way out.
That is North Shore a cappella. From Mr. Tom Duart, from Vinny Stratcher, from Jimmy Martin, from Guy Ciapponi, and Paul Lopes. Thanks, guys, for doing that one. We have had a few moments with the word miggle. We will go first to Carolyn Faye Fox.
Miggle. At first, I thought it was a muffled giggle, or to mix socially while giggling would be to miggle. But simply it means miggle is to shred into a pile of small pieces.
To shred into a pile of pieces, pile of small pieces, is to miggle. Sounds logical. Could be that or something else. Ernie, what say you?
It's a tiny Russian airplane. A little cool war, yeah. Apparently, it's that dill mixture that they throw cucumbers into in order to transform them into that most appetizing deli staple. It's pickle brine.
Miggle.
Pickle brine.
Miggle.
Miggle is pickle brine. Could be that. Or Paula?
You know, I was right up there with Carolyn. I thought it would probably describe what we've been doing here today, which is messing up and giggling all afternoon. But anyway, this is really about getting your Aggie and your game on, because you want to hit that miggle. It's the marble you're aiming at.
Ooh. The marble. We got an ooh from the audience.
We got an ooh.
The marble you're aiming at. You play in marbles, you got a shooter, the shooter hits the miggle. Could be that. It could be that. It could be the pickle brine. Or it could be to shred into small pieces. One thing is certain, it's one of them, and the choice is yours, Baron.
Well, team, should we stab at this or agonize over it? I go stab.
Let's somewhere stab. In between. I like it, but
let's
it's in
kill
between.
It.
All right. I think it's the pickle mixture.
Oh, no. Sorry, with all due respect. All
mystified that much.
Can you know, I used to be a waiter in a deli, and I would always hear, give me a bizzle, a sizzle. I can't believe that's true.
You
that's my
work
only
everywhere.
Reason. You could be right.
Lenore, did you understand what he just said?
The end of it was that you could be right. But why,
you know,
why
Aggies.
Would you get explain how you would get to Miggle from pickle brine?
I don't believe that this is the section of the show where sweet reason applies.
Touché.
Tony and I both jumped at the marble you're aiming at because that sounded sort of Richard-y.
It's a wonderful definition.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing that Richard would just, his ears would be whirling if he came across that.
So now we're psychoanalyzing Richard.
Ooh, 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 he'd say.
Just on the off chance it will give me the opportunity to say something along the lines of, I told you so, I will go with the marble then.
Oh, you're a jack.
No, the audience.
little derision from the audience there.
Ooh,
so the
do
audience doesn't like marble.
Well, wait.
You don't like pickle.
We don't think it's shred into a pile of small pieces, though, right? We didn't even consider Carolyn.
I believe that Nabisco would be out with miggled wheat. If
miggled wheat.
Let's go ahead and go with the marble.
Oh.
This is the only three choices we've got. We got to go with one of these.
Tony, tell him what to do.
Barry, will you?
Tony?
Well, I was just, let me at least offer my reason. It was like Aggie, the terms that they have, for, and there's a cat's eye. They're just lovely little names for marbles. So why don't we just end it all and... You decide.
I think that helped a lot. We'll go with marble.
Well, that seemed to help a lot.
Paula,
they've now decided that a miggle is the marble you're shooting at. Is that in fact what it is?
Miggle. In the game of marbles, it's the marble you're shooting at.
That's what it is. 10 points.
Well reasoned, Tony.
Thank God we're out of the pickle bucket.
Let's go on to round three. Remember about 2 years ago, our friend Frank Cunningham told us of the Ig Nobel Awards, presented annually at Harvard's Sanders Theater to scientists whose work at first makes us laugh and later actually makes us think. It's time to honor this year's recipients of the Iggy. So, Carolyn, see if you can help us out here. A team of French and Dutch researchers won this year's physics prize for their work differentiating the relative disorientation of field participants. What truth were they seeking?
They were spinning the sheep around to see how dizzy they would get.
She's closer than you know, ladies and gentlemen. I will say that field is capitalized, in... Track and field.
Track and field. That's where I was going.
Oh, track and field. So it has something to do with...
disorientation.
With running a certain number of
circles.
Laps, running in circles.
No, it's not.
No, it's
track. It's more field. This is field.
Oh, it's
okay.
Catapulting, or rather...
We're talking about discus throwing, and javelin throwing, and shot putting.
And they have to whirl around
to whirl
in order
around
to get
order
enough
to,
force.
Right.
And how dizzy do they get?
You know something?
Yeah.
Good
right.
enough. 10
yeah.
points. Very good.
Yeah. But they want
the key here is, though, differentiating. Can you imagine what they were trying to differentiate?
How long it takes you to throw up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah? They were differentiating.
They could not
figure out why discus throwers always become dizzy and hammer throwers don't.
No.
Oh. So they did research.
Is it the weight?
Look at Barry's face.
Well, I think it's because they can't afford to. I mean, if you're swinging a hammer,
You can't afford to do this.
Can you imagine?
You ever pick up a discus?
Sorry, audience, I lost my balance. You know,
you're rotating around closer to the center, and thus your rotations are going faster when you're doing the discus?
I think you'll have to go look up their research and find out.
Okay.
That's the physics prize. Try this one, Tony. This year's mathematics prize went to, of all people, Pat Robertson.
No kidding.
And several others for their contribution to imprecise termination. Why were they being honored?
Well, like in a duel, when you go 1, 2, 3 and fire, in this case, it's just 1, 2 and you fired. And they're wondering if that's cheating.
No.
Does it have something to do with figuring out from biblical material the end of the world date?
It not only does, but why were they being honored for imprecise termination?
I've noticed it didn't.
10 points is exactly right. Dorothy Martin of the USA, Pat Robertson, Elizabeth Clare, you know, just a whole mess of people here, predicted on different dates that the world would end. Of course, it didn't, and so for this taught the world to be careful when making mathematical assumptions and calculations. So they get the mathematics prize for this year.
You know that guy that predicted in May that the world was going to end, and then had the there was a guy out in California and then had the stroke shortly after that?
Yeah.
He's now come back and said he's predicted again at the end of this month.
Duck.
Right.
Duck.
All I can say.
Try this one, Arnie. I love this. The Peace Prize this year went to Arturas Zwakas, the mayor of Vilnius, Lithuania, for demonstrating the effectiveness of brute force on vehicular inertia. What work led to this honor?
Did you get in some car crash?
Well, it has to do with cars, of
course. Pushing the car.
In a way.
In a way?
He pushed the car out of the way of...
With his car.
He did for a specific reason.
Yeah.
He wanted the parking space.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right.
Wow.
Do you remember that? Do you remember the footage?
Yeah.
This is the guy that took the tank.
Right.
Okay. He showed the problem that the problem of illegally parked luxury cars can be solved by running over them with an armored tank.
Yeah.
Hey!
And for this, he was given the Peace Prize.
You should see how he handled the sewage problem.
Thank you for an image that won't go away today.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Speaking of throwing the discus.
Glenora, try this one. Oh, boy. This year's Chemistry Prize went to a team of Japanese scientists for the development and invention of the wasabi alarm.
Oh!
What olfactory advance have they made to society?
Oh, stick it up your nose first, and then if it hurts, don't eat it.
No, they made a meter for when your sinuses explode from wasabi.
They absolutely did. Why?
So you'd know when to stop.
Oh, it uses wasabi as the alarm to get your attention?
That is exactly right.
Wow.
That is exactly
right.
Can you imagine why this might be true?
There are some people that sleep through audible alarms.
There are. But what these researchers have found out is that nobody can sleep through a certain level of wasabi. So it's true. They determined the ideal density of airborne wasabi to awaken sleeping people in case of a fire or an emergency. Okay? And it also has the added benefit of not waking the neighbors.
I see
so
20 guys...
So does this
guys...
go off in the house when...
Yes.
My teenage son is in big trouble.
Oh, boy. That's the wasabi alarm. Try this one, Paula. This year's prize for literature went to John Perry of Stanford University for his theory of structured procrastination.
Structured.
Which says, of course...
Oh, structured procrastination. Yes. Well, you start procrastinating on Sunday, and on Friday, after having done a little every day, you're still procrastinating.
but
you're getting points
it.
For that. You're getting points for that. That's
making lists of what you're not going to do.
Well, that what you
that's good.
What you're not going to do is very important.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah. Structured and so you got a lot of points. So you put what you're not going to do on your calendar instead of what you are going to do.
And you live by
and
that.
And you fill your calendar with that, as a matter of fact.
And you honor the message.
I'm going to give them a lot of points for that.
20.
20.
Any help from the other side? Any
is it of all the things you are not going to do, first do the things you don't like the most?
There you go.
His theory says to be a high achiever, always work on something important, using it as a way to avoid doing something that's more important.
So that's that like don't do today what you do the day after.
Exactly. Yeah. That is the theory of structured procrastination. Mr. Perry of Stanford University, congratulations for winning the Literature Prize. And finally, Barry, the Medicine Prize went to an international team of Dutch, U.S., and Australian researchers for their work studying the qualitative effect of delayed micturition on judgment.
No kidding.
What did they demonstrate?
Delay
your ability to make a good decision is in inverse ratio to your need to use the bathroom.
Right.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. 10 points.
Wow.
Their work found that people make better decisions when they're not suffering the urge to use the facilities. That's exactly right. 10 points for that. Let's go on to round 4, which is Barry's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word, two will bluff. 10 points, Paula, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to create a definition for the word quadriga. Q-U-A-D-R-I-G-A. Quadriga.
Quadriga.
Gentlemen?
The shop has such teeth made, and he shows them a pearly white now. Just a jackknife as old Maggie made, and he keeps it out of sight.
Just a quick reminder, Says You heads to Port Townsend, Washington, Friday evening, June 21st, for a Community Says You to support the Clemente Course for the Humanities. Join Says You team captains and local denizens for an evening of wit and wordplay. Tickets, information, and details available, of course, at saysyou.net, where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. And should you wish to join the greats, John Henderson of Lodi, New York, David Zobel of Los Angeles, or Nicole Kramer of Guilford, Vermont, contribute a question to Says You, because frankly, Phil and I are hitting a dry spell.
Summoning's mad tonight. Yeah, well, now there's a tugboat. Ooh, it's down by the river, don't you know?
Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back.
That Maggie,
Maggie, Maggie,
yes,
Look out, old Mackie is back in town.
Very good. That is North Shore a cappella. Thank you very much, guys. We have had a few moments with the word quadriga. We will go first to Tony Khan.
I don't know how it's done. I expect it's like it's a dance, you know, like four steps to the left, two steps back, dog leg to the left, cat leg to the right, and then go home with someone else. that's my assumption, but it's a Bulgarian square dance.
A Bulgarian square dance.
Bulgarian square dance.
Is a quadriga? Could be.
Hoi.
Hoi. Or it could be something else. Lenore, what say you?
Well, it's a chariot with four things pulling it. So
things?
It could be four of anything. Could be...
pigs?
could be horses, could be pigs, could be cows.
Certified
whatever
public
Whatever it is, it could be a plow. Oh, do you know Ben-Hur had the you know, four things in
a
front
quadriga.
Of him? Or
things?
Yeah, quadriga. Like four in the rig.
A four-horse...
Exactly.
Chariot pulled by four horses.
Or, yeah.
Ben-Hur drove a quadriga.
As an example.
Okay. Could be that. Or Barry, something else.
Quadriga is rhymed verse used as a mnemonic device. As in, if A equals B and B equals C, then D-D-D-D-D-D-D-D-D-D-D-D. I didn't say it was good verse.
A rhyme verse used as a mnemonic device is a quadriga.
There is a great one to remember the 12 cranial nerves.
Yeah.
On old Olympus's towering tops, a Finn and German viewed some hops.
Oh, okay. That's what it is. Now, it could be rhyming verse used as a mnemonic. That's what a quadriga could be. It could be a four-horse chariot, or it could be the Bulgarian square dance we heard of first. It's one of those three, and the choice, Paula, falls to you.
Well, I believe that dance is properly known as a quadrille, I think. So I'm just going to put that aside for
the
a
The Bulgarian version.
I think it is very possibly the chariot drawn by four horses, and that was a lot of obfuscation on the part of our esteemed
four horses and
competitor.
A lot of hooey.
And rhymed verse used as a mnemonic device sounds very intellectually Barry. Yeah. So... it could be real,
it's
though.
Like,
so what do you think?
Quatraining. Yeah, I'm beginning to think a quadriga is a rig with four horses.
I'll go for it.
Okay, we'll go for that.
For no other reason.
We think it's a chariot.
Chariot sounds better than Bulgarian square dance. I don't know.
Paula has led her team to the decision that a quadriga is a four-horse chariot. It's like the one Ben-Hur drove. That was your definition. Lenore, is that, in fact, what a quadriga is?
Quadriga, a four-horse chariot like the one Ben-Hur had.
That's exactly what it is.
It's all right.
This week's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Danny Miller of Birmingham, Alabama. Danny writes, first time we ever heard Says You was in our dorm room in college, memorable for a round of college nicknames. Do you still have that one around? And can it be a Spotlight Round? Here at Says You, Danny, we throw nothing out. Back we go to season 5, when Flash Wiley and Francine Akbar joined us for a round of collegiate nicknames.
Now listen to
the following are all collegiate sobriquets. Please tell me, in each case, to which college am I referring, and how did the nickname arise? Carolyn Sooners.
Early admission.
You know, if you get the college, I'm giving you points for this.
All right. Arnie says it's Oklahoma.
It is Oklahoma. The Oklahoma Sooners, and you're getting some creativity points on that.
The Oklahoma Sooners?
Yeah. Do you have any idea?
The Oklahoma Sooners. Oklahoma is the Sooner state.
Because...
They arrive sooner rather than later.
That's
it has something to do with the pioneers, doesn't it?
That's, you know, give them the full 10 points.
Yeah.
Guys.
They got there and stopped.
Prairie schooners.
They got there and stopped.
I'm
and
giving
prairie
her
schooners.
It is indeed the state of Oklahoma from the land rush, a state populated by those who arrived sooner or got across the line before others.
Flash.
Yes.
Tar Heel.
Tar Heel is North Carolina. Mm-hmm.
It is, in fact.
It is indeed. Now, the origin of the Tar Heel.
It has something to do with the way they shot their feet.
It has something to do
then.
With running fast, wasn't it?
It yes and no. it does.
Or they didn't.
You can help
as
if
though
you,
they had tar on their heels. They as were stuck.
That is true. 8 points for that. You're 8 points there. It's from the Civil War.
Right. Aha.
It is from the Civil War, and there are two conflicting positions here, so I want the radio audience to resolve this. I had two sources, one saying it showed the steadfastness of the North Carolinians who held their positions as if their heels were mired in tar. And it, I found another source which said they were slow in getting to the battle as their heels. I'm sure that there are people listening in North Carolina that can clear this matter up quite quickly. Arnie,
here it comes.
Terrapins. Ooh, an ooh from the audience.
Terrapins.
Who are the terrapins? Florida? Somewhere in there?
No.
So
it'd be turtles.
Terrapins are turtles.
Right.
They are turtles. So you're
so
halfway there.
How come I
really
can't...
Really slow.
What's the college, guys?
Turtles. The Culinary Institute of America.
The Culinary Institute of America. Now, the Culinary Institute of America terrapins.
Louisiana?
Yes,
no,
yeah,
the...
No, at
Tennessee, Louisiana.
I think I got to go to the other side, put an end to this.
It's Maryland.
It is Maryland, in fact. Wow. Yes, the Maryland terrapins, and terrapins are a type of Eastern Shore turtle. Francine, Razorbacks.
Well, now I know.
Go ahead, help me.
Arkansas.
This is not my forte. Okay.
Arkansas
is correct. You have any idea where the name comes from?
Well, it clearly isn't clams.
No, it is not clams.
It's a type of pig.
It is,
Razorback is a type of pig.
It is, in fact, 10 points named for the pig, the Arkansas Razorback from the hog of the same variety.
I was waiting for one of these.
Well, this is the one he's waiting for. Watch this. I bet you $10 is the one he's waiting for.
Here it comes.
Paula Hoya.
I knew it.
Oh, we knew this was coming.
I told her she was going to get that one.
He did, and we have no idea what it means, but we know it's Georgetown.
Holy Order of Young Americans.
We have no idea what Hoya is.
It is, in fact, Georgetown. You're halfway
there. That's a Georgetown.
I know Hoya personally.
Now, does anyone in the audience have any idea?
Back there.
Ask the guy from Georgetown.
Hoya is Latin for Hoya Saxa, which means what rocks.
That is exactly right. 10 points to the audience.
Yeah, Mr. Wiley, Mr. Pratt Wiley, a big round of applause.
Pratt Wiley from Georgetown University. It is
Thank
from the Greek
you.
And Latin words Hoya Saxa, meaning what rocks. They used to call themselves in the 1800s the Stone Wall or the Stone Men, and it was a cheer designed to spur the men to granite-like resistance in the face of adversity. So
Hoya.
The Georgia, Hoya so Saxa. It's actually the Georgetown what? And Tony,
okay.
See if you can send us out with a bang here. Boilermaker.
Boilermaker?
The University of Miami or something.
It would seem to be.
No. You know I'm a native Hoosier, which it's Purdue University.
It is Purdue University. Do you have any idea where this comes from?
Well, Purdue is an engineering and technical school, and I think that at some point the graduates of Purdue University made boilers. Yeah.
Creativity will get you 10 points every time. Very good. Nothing to do with the truth, but you've never seen the Boilermaker special, though. The little black train that comes flying straight at you is the Purdue Boilermaker mascot, is the little black train.
You gotta say it's all right.
That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. That's our look back. Now, back to the present.
Yeah, it's all right.
Let's close tonight a round of high carumba. For 10 points, please define the following lofty terms. Carolyn, high cockalorum.
What?
High cockalorum?
High cockalorum is
C-O-C-K-A-L-O-R-U-M. High cockalorum.
High cockalorum.
Hi.
How's it going?
High cockalorum. Balderdash?
Not really. No, I wouldn't go that way. It's
not just a lot of
hooey.
Hooey. Somebody speaking hooey.
It is somebody, yes. It is the correct definition is it is a somebody.
An elected official?
Is it an elected official?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's a big shot, a guy with great pretensions.
Oh, so it's Donald Trump.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
10 points. There's a high cockalorum if ever I saw one. It's a big shot. Great pretensions is a high cockalorum. It's also a dangerous leapfrog-like game banned in 1950.
Banned?
Played with studs?
All right, try this one, Tony. What might be meant by high renaissance?
High renaissance was the point at which the Renaissance attained its greatest creations and creators.
And can you give me any...
like Leonardo da Vinci, like Michelangelo.
Yes, and can you give me any kind of feeling for what that all looked like?
Beautiful.
Beautiful. 10 points, that's fine. Beautiful works.
Beautiful.
I was going to go on and on about heroic centralized composition and mature humanistic content, but the heck with it. It's
beautiful.
Beautiful takes care of that. Beautiful.
Out of sight. Just beautiful.
Arnie.
Yeah.
What might be meant by high lonesome?
High lonesome?
Yes.
Being up on your horse all by yourself.
High lonesome. I thought it was a greeting to a sailor.
High lonesome.
High lonesome.
High lonesome.
It doesn't mean to be all by yourself?
No, it does not, actually.
It's high lonesome as an H-I-G-H?
Yes, H-I-G-H.
Is it lonesome. From the Wild West?
I don't think so. I don't think it goes back that far.
It's not being...
High lonesome.
I think this is more turn of the 20th century kind
so
of
does
thing.
So does this mean you're a highly placed personage, but like everyone
all by yourself
at the top
on,
of the
on a position, taking a position no one else
yeah,
is taking?
Well, lonely at the top.
Finish my sentence for me. That's
great. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm being asked the question.
No.
Never mind. Never had...
Said love, honor, and obey. There was nothing in there about interrupting.
No.
Nothing. Does the other side have any ideas?
Wait a minute. We're not done here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're not done here.
Give it a shot.
I paid for this microphone. Go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, go ahead. No. Oh, please, after you. I insist. Now we're done, I think.
Well, I think we're all glad about that, certainly. Other side, what do you think?
Isn't it the kind of territory that Jeremiah Johnson in the movies went to, the up in the mountains where you're up in the high lonesome and there's nobody around?
This could is a
be,
real specific...
Could it be a skyscraper?
I'm sorry to say this, because a high lonesome is a drunk.
A drunk?
A bender. A spree.
Never heard of
is
it.
Is a high lonesome.
Okay,
I'm so sorry. I thought that we all learned a little something today, did
That's
we not?
Great.
And after the show, we can all go out in the high lonesome. What do you think? All right, Lenore, I'm going to be very precise on this. What might be meant by higher mathematics?
Something that I've never gone anywhere near.
Probably not, but I'm going to be specific on it.
Higher than geometry. Mathematics higher is than astronomy.
I don't know.
Higher mathematics.
Well, certain parts of it could be.
How about
be,
theoretical? Just it's not with no application whatsoever to the real physical world.
What he said.
You know something? That's very close, Tony.
It's called research. I mean, high mathematicians call themselves researchers when they're doing mathematics because they're looking for even more abstract truths, you know, and it's mathematics about mathematics.
Yeah, you know what? 10 points. Very, very good, Tony. That's excellent.
Excellent.
It is.
Theoretical math.
When you depart from the laws of the physical world, when you get past calculus and go past the laws of the physical world and change and all that kind of thing, that's higher mathematics. So you have to be out past calculus. You have to be out past conventional physics before you
actually,
get
at my age, you have to be out past simple addition.
At your age, you have to be out past 8 p.m.
That's your last straight line of the evening.
Oh, boy. Try this one, Paula. I love finding this one out. High T. And I'm going to be specific about this also. High T.
High T is a very elaborate ceremonial tea that they have in England, and it's copied in other parts of the world.
Why? How do you think it
differs from low tea?
I think probably the amount and the quality of the accompanying food. It could be like a meal.
That's part of it. That's
the
part
time.
Of it.
The time of
the
day.
The time of day.
And
o'clock?
The time of day, but there's something very specific that makes it high and low.
It's served on a high cart.
That is exactly right, Winnie. Oh. Very good. Nice job. It's not a cart. It's the table, as opposed to the coffee table types that are placed one near one sofa and chair for low tea. So that's why it's called high and low tea. And finally, Barry, what might be meant by high port?
High port?
It's what you have at high tea.
So is it a nautical?
It is not. It has nothing to do with nautical at all.
So does it have to do with the beverage?
It does not.
How about with carrying something
yes.
on your shoulders?
It
oh,
has
or
everything
on your
to do with carrying
oh,
something.
Oh, guns? Is it the way you carry your weapon?
Unbelievable. That is exactly right, Barry. Very good.
Wow.
That was a good one.
It is a cross-body position in which the rifle is carried while the soldier is charging or jumping. That's when you carry it at high port. Very good, Barry. Look at that total. 97 points for Barry Nolan's team. Yeah. Winners this week. Congratulations. That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Neil Feinberg and all the folks at Bemis Hall here in beautiful Lincoln for making it so much fun. Scher and Salkind are the writers. Antonio Oliart mans the meters. And Zach Moore is soon to be a college graduate. So long today from Massachusetts, where it is illegal to keep a mule on the second floor unless you got two exits. And where you cannot sell rabbits, chicks, or ducklings that have been painted a different color. I should hope not. Thanks for the fun, Lincoln. We'll see you all next week. Here says you again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high quality copies available. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You. Created and produced by Pippin and Finch. Busted.
This is 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML, Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS, Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.